From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, it's The Treatment. Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's always good to have somebody on the show who's done it a couple times before. And for movies I think that occupy, I think, a unique place in the world of cinema, he finds the comedy in what could be intensely dramatic situations, from The Night Before to The Whackness to 50-50. There's always comedy to give us some perspective on what these people are going through. His new film, Long Shot, certainly trades on that as well. And very interesting, potentially dramatic situation. First of all, Jonathan Levine, it's good to have you back.
Great to be here. Thank you.
But you do that, don't you? I mean, you do find these situations that could be played as much for drama as for comedy, don't you?
When I first met Seth and Evan to do 50-50, it was after I'd done The Whackness, and we kind of bonded.
And Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg. Yeah.
Yes, who produced 50-50, and they were looking for a filmmaker, and I sort of came in to pitch myself for it. And we talked a lot about the movies of Hal Ashby, and how that was sort of that became this kind of common touchstone for us. And I think for me, being able to, you know, joking and laughing is kind of the grammar with which I speak about life, you know, just as a human being. There's nothing I could not joke about in my own personal life. And so to me, it's just a perspective on the world. And I think sometimes, you know, the movies are able to take that perspective. And I think that's when they're the most successful, is they're reflecting a worldview. And I think Hal Ashby was like the first person I saw who did that.
Yeah, and we could say the same thing about Ashby, too. If you look at The Last Detail or Shampoo or Being There, those movies that could function as much as drama as they do comedy, couldn't they?
Yeah, and I think that they're not sweaty. You know, they don't really go for jokes with the standard rhythm that you're used to from comedy. And I think recently in mainstream comedy, the rhythms have become more Ashby-esque. I think a lot of it is influenced, whether it be The Office or you know, Parks and Rec. Like, that kind of rhythm has gotten into comedy these days, and it does owe a lot to Hal Ashby, I think.
But it's also, too, you often take act, you basically take somebody who's known as much for comedy as anything else, along with somebody who's known as much for drama.
I mean, yeah.
In the situation of Long Shot, it's Seth, who's certainly known in the world of comedy, and Charlize, who we tend to think of as a much more dramatic actor.
Yeah, and I really love that tension between a comedic actor and a dramatic actor. I think I like to sort of, like, Charlize, we felt, was classing us up a little bit, and in turn, we were kind of, I don't want to say bringing her down, but, you know, we were showing a new side of her. And that, it's not dissimilar from Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Seth in 50-50. It's that tension injects, like, a spark to every scene.
We could even say the same thing with Ben Kingsley and Josh Peck.
That's true, yeah. Yeah, I've been lucky enough to kind of convince these really fancy actors to do these really dumb things. I don't know I guess that's a gift I have.
I think this part of the conversation and talking to these actors, it get to be about taking them out of their comfort zone a little bit, or what is that?
I mean, I don't really highlight that part, just because, you know, probably would add to the stress. I mean, I could tell that from the get-go, Charlize was stressed out about going into this new work mode. I mean, it's not just going into a new way of working. It's you're you know, socially, you're dropped into a group of people who all know each other. This is the third movie we've made together. So I think in that way, you know, people don't necessarily think about off-screen, like, sort of the social dynamics of a movie set, but they're profoundly intense. Luckily, you know, we all got along really well. And I think, you know, we were intimidated by her. You know, we were used to just sitting around, and if you were to be a fly on the wall of our conversations as writers, we would not seem that impressive. And so we really had to we had to kind of up our game when Charlize was a part of it. And I think we embraced that too. But I think for her, it did seem like she was a little overwhelmed at the beginning and intimidated. And I think that, by the way, she needn't have been. She was incredible from the very first day. But what I later learned is, like, the reason she is who she is because she takes on these challenges. And it's not that she takes on these challenges and she's not scared. She takes on these challenges and she's scared. And it's a very human thing. But she doesn't know any other way to do it. She's just so brave. And she really needs a challenge in order to kind of achieve her creative goals. And it's really incredible. She embraced it. She loved being out of her comfort zone. I mean, she didn't love being out of her comfort zone, but she needed to be out of her comfort zone. So yeah, we didn't talk about it that much though. I would just kind of give her support. And by the middle of our working relationship, I would be very candid with her. But at the beginning, I was just really there to give her support. And it wasn't hard. She was so good. She was harder on herself than anyone else.
It's so interesting as you're talking about this, what comes to mind is obviously this character she's playing is somebody who's going through a lot of tension too and trying to find a way to deal with that while trying to achieve this enormous new personal goal she set for herself.
We did talk a lot about that. We did talk a lot about sort of the overlap or the crossover between her personal experience and who the character she was playing. I mean, she's playing a Secretary of State who goes up against many obstacles in trying to be president. She's in a very sort of misogynistic world. She's dealing with a lot of guys who are condescending to her. She's dealing with the media who is looking at her as sort of a commodity and an object. You know, so this stuff obviously does come up in her personal life because she's a celebrity and her character is a celebrity. It's a sort of American royalty is who she's playing. So we definitely talked a lot about that. And I think that the dialogue between sort of the subtextual dialogue between her celebrity and her character is actually a part of the movie. You know, that's the other thing about working with her and working with me and Seth and why I think if she was scared at the beginning, it quickly went away because we really are so collaborative. We want her perspective. You know, we know the movie will be better if we integrate her point of view into it because it's a two-hander movie. And we have an infrastructure that allows for that. We have a collaborative system that can quickly take her input. I mean, we are always rewriting the script. So when we sit down a week before shooting and we go through and we read page by page and we encourage everyone to sort of chime in with their own personal experiences, that quickly gets put into the script. Even on the day, anything can get put into the script.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
It is as chaotic as it sounds.
We're talking about chaos and tension, two things that are basically the foundation of comedy, with my guest, Jonathan Levine, whose new film is Long Shot, it's The Treatment. As we're talking about this, though, too, I just find myself thinking, and even the films that you haven't written, you so often are making films about people who are in two different worlds colliding.
Yeah.
And the tension from those two worlds that are so disparate. Is that something for you that feels like it can play as much as comedy as drama and it fits into this thing we're talking about?
Well, I think two different worlds colliding is like a great sort of it's such fertile ground for comedy, certainly. And then I think when these two different worlds collide, the drama, I guess, is from seeing sort of the empathetic connections between the two characters. I mean, it's also kind of something I like to do, which is mix tones a little bit. And so two different worlds colliding, quite frequently, the actors from each of these worlds has a different tone, different rhythms, different ways of telling jokes, different ways of engaging with the world. So yeah, I think that's something that I really like to do, something that I find really interesting.
I guess I just find it interesting too, because so often these worlds, one of the characters is trying to hold on to a kind of discipline, you know, and is often compromised by the discipline, but they're trying to sort of hold to that thing, even though it doesn't make any sense for them to do that anymore.
Right.
And the person who isn't disciplined is kind of the truth teller. And that tension plays a lot in your work too, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I do think that's interesting just as far as, you know, how I've found people move forward in their lives. You know, I think it's you know, in movies you see these sort of life-changing seminal moments and you're meant to imagine people changing for the rest of their lives. And that's not necessarily been my experience. You know, I keep waiting for that stuff to happen, but it hasn't yet. And so I think that, you know, when you're showing these moments in movies and people kind of, yeah, they're trying to hold on to things, but then they're confronted with other perspectives and they integrate those perspectives, but they don't necessarily change. And I think that is that's something that I've tried to explore as well.
I don't think it's a lack of optimism, because these situations are often dire. I mean, they're life and death circumstances, and certainly in all these films, and it's about how people encounter this,
yeah,
and that they're not changed, but they have to come to some understanding about themselves, don't they?
Yeah, I think that's interesting too. Is just learning new things about yourself, and yeah, I think in a lot of my movies, that is something that happens. I mean, in this movie, I think we really tried to we really tried to have our, we're working within the tropes of a romantic comedy, right? But within it, we're trying to be as sort of naturalistic and true to life as possible and sort of have that engage in a dialogue with the actual tropes of romantic comedy in a way. So we tried very hard to have our characters get their lessons in grounded, realistic ways. And I remember there was this, like, so Seth's character basically wears these windbreakers for most of the movie. And he said the windbreakers were actually based on my style. I don't know. I'm sort of, I was insulted, but I guess his approach was, you know, this character is sort of a sustained adolescent and he wears these kind of windbreakers and these little silly hats. And at a certain point, you know, we do the moment where he wears a tux and he looks great. And we have that, you know, we're playing in that romantic comedy trope and it's satisfying. The reason we do it is because we love romantic comedies and we find it to be satisfying. But then, and I remember this was very important to Seth, he just went back to wearing the same windbreakers. He didn't like, we didn't evolve his style. He didn't get more clean cut. In fact, the only thing he says he did is shave his neck. So like, there's not, you know, we tried to make these changes incremental the way we felt life would happen.
It's so funny too, because so often the characters that Seth plays, not so often, the characters he plays in your movies, he tends to be these a version of a pretty angry guy.
Yeah.
Or a guy who's fighting his anger all the time. And we should say the character he plays here is he's a journalist for an alternative newspaper out of Brooklyn who as a living is a truth teller. And that character, that idea of character who's so often made angry by people who compromise themselves is something you trade on pretty often with him too.
Yeah, and I think that was what was, you know, really drew me to the script was like the juxtaposition between this very outraged person who you see very often and in fact, you know, I am very often in this day and age with this other person who has been forced to make compromises but who is a true pragmatist and who has actually gotten so many things done. I think that the tension between those two ideals is really what this movie is about. And I think that, you know, Seth also just does outrage so well. I mean, he can mine it so well for humor. But it's also, you know, I think it was also important to us to make the point of view of the movie not outraged, because we needed the point of view of the movie to be, you know, it's a fairy tale. It's an escapist fairy tale at the end of the day. And so we wanted to sort of zoom out from the outrage of today and have a more sort of sober outlook on the world and also feel a little bit more like, just wanted it to feel more optimistic, because we felt that that was more consistent with the tone of a romantic comedy. It's very hard to be outraged and romantic at the same time.
We'll take a break. We're talking about mining optimism out of tragedy with my guest, Jonathan Levine, whose new comedy is Long Shot. It's The Treatment. There's more to come. Stay with us.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Welcome back. It's The Treatment. I'm talking to our old friend Jonathan Levine, whose new movie is Long Shot with Charlize Theron and Seth Rogen. I guess, though, what I was trying to get at here is that idea of hope drawing people together. I mean, these people are looking in some way for a change they haven't been able to articulate in their own lives.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think that quite frequently the other person is able to help you remember who you wanted to be or help you be the best version of yourself. I definitely think, you know, with Warm Bodies, we tried to do that in a very literal way because—
But it's also, again, two different worlds
and
this tension that comes from that, two very different kinds of actors. I mean, this idea of sort of the abrasion, the sparks that happen when ostensible opposites get together is something that just runs through what you do.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that this, you know, Long Shot and Warm Bodies actually share a lot of DNA. Even though they're incredibly different superficially. But yeah, I mean, I think that that's something that's really exciting to me, is just meeting someone who will, the idea that you can articulate that, meeting someone who can kind of show you a new side of yourself and really help you fulfill. It's not that someone completes you. It's like they help you complete yourself in a way.
But again, there's that schism between truth and somebody not being able to see the truth in front of them. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, that happens so often too. I mean, the Josh Peck character, certainly Gordon-Levitt in 50-50, and Charlize here, the person not being able to see that. And what's interesting here, though, is that there's I thought it was a really sweet addition, is that basically the person that Seth's character is was formed by Charlize's character when they were kids.
Yeah. And that was always kind of really important to us, is this you know, they had known each other for a very long time. And, you know, when they reconnect, they sort of, I mean, you have one person who's exactly where they should be, who's the Secretary of State, who's living the best version of her life. And you have Seth's character, who has just been laid off and is, you know, can't help but get in his own way. And they...
And the person basically is kind of the same person he was when he last saw her in a lot of ways,
yeah,
isn't he?
Yeah, he is just... he is just sort of stagnated. He has just kind of stopped, and he is, you know, he's someone who kind of reminds me a little. There's a little bit of me in there, and there's a little bit of so many people. Well, not in this stagnated part, but in the part that, you know, he holds so true to his ideals, and he spends a lot of time just on the internet in his own echo chamber of outrage. And I think that, you know, that's not something I do a lot, but it's something that, you know, I identify with, certainly. It's a very kind of modern version of this character. And it's someone who is only kind of connecting to people who share the same point of view as him, and someone who is kind of just screaming into the void and not really affecting much change. Whereas Charlize's character is kind of putting aside all that in order to take a pragmatic approach, but actually get stuff done. And I think that what Seth's character reminds her of, though, is, and this is something that I think about all the time, is like, you know, yeah, maybe you're exactly where you want to be. Maybe the job you have is the job you always wanted, and you can convince yourself that this is, you know, you're living the best version of your life. But, you know, think about the young version of you and what she would want from you today. And I think about that whenever I'm choosing to make a new movie or, you know, whatever. I think what would the young version of me, who wanted nothing more than to be a film director, you know, would look at me today and say, cool, you did it. But are you making every choice for the right reasons? And are you going as far as you could? And you know, usually the answer, luckily, is yes. But I think it's a really interesting question.
I think it is too, because that idea of adult compromise,
yeah,
steps in every move you've made. That idea of, well, you become an adult, and you have to leave that person you were behind, that ideal person behind, becomes a big part of the storytelling, at least the emotional storytelling.
Well, and the weird thing is, it's true, right? I mean, that's why it has to be a part of it. It's like, you could make a case that is something that is totally true, and you would much rather be in Charlize's character's place than Seth's character's place, because she has actually accomplished stuff. So it's true, but at a certain point, and I think this is where the line blurs, is like, at a certain point, you become the sum total of those compromises, and can you stand behind that? You know, I don't think the movie's saying don't compromise. I think certainly part of the lesson of the movie and part of its agenda is like, Seth's character needs to tone himself down. Seth's character needs to get more of a perspective on the world and chill out a little bit. But that said, you know, you can also look at Charlize's character and think, you know, that perhaps she's compromising a little too much, or perhaps that there's a different way to sort of go about, you know, her job moving forward. And I think once she's or that she can be more open with the public. And I think once she sort of embraces that, and once she takes on a little bit of that from him, she's able to be a much more kind of fully realized version of herself.
It's so interesting, though, because so many of these things, again, like I was saying, be it things you've written or things that came to you, have been these worlds that interest you. And
yeah.
I just wonder how conscious you are of seeking this kind of thing out.
I think it's probably a little bit more subconscious. Like, I think that, you know, I definitely gravitate toward characters that are at a certain point in their life and having these sort of existential crises. I'm not sure that I look for... You know, I don't know what the... I think you did a better job kind of articulating the common theme than I possibly could. But I do think that there's... You know, I do identify with this sort of person at a certain phase in their life being confronted by these existential dilemmas. And I think that in this movie, I get to do it with both Seth and Charlize, and two different, very, very different types of people at very different places in their life. But I think, yeah, there's also kind of a sustained adolescence thing that goes through all these movies as well. And, perhaps that says something about me that I would not care to talk about right now.
We're talking about sustaining with the director of Long Shot, Jonathan Levine, is the treatment. But what also happens in these movies too, and I wonder how much this is you bringing to it, is that you tend to not judge these characters. So often in comedies, more in fact in comedy than drama, the tension comes from one of these characters, especially the one who's going to compromise, being judged for that.
Yeah.
And maybe the character's judging, but the movie don't judge these people, do that.
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, I think with Long Shot, we definitely did want to point out that Seth's character had a lot of growing to do. But I think what comes through from the perspective of the filmmaker and from the perspective of the movie is that I love these characters. I just love them. I find them funny. I find them charming. I find them, and I love, especially in this movie, I loved watching them fall in love. And so I think that love and genuine respect for their point of view does come through. And no, I am not a particularly judgmental person in my personal life or in my professional life. I really do like to listen to people and I like to depict people who are very flawed because I identify with that, you know, and I like seeing that on screen. And I like seeing it without judgment. That doesn't mean they don't have lessons to learn. That doesn't mean they're not going to grow over the course of a story. But I think as a starting place, a lack of judgment is a pretty good way to go, whether it be personally or professionally.
Well, because I guess I'm asking this because that judgment becomes a way of, I think, maybe distancing us because it becomes you can very easily make fun of these people rather than having them be real characters. You know, it's the difference between them being two-dimensional and three-dimensional, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. And I also think it's just funnier not to judge someone because you can kind of be
really?
In it with them.
Because so much of comedy is about that judgment.
I don't know. I think that's a different kind of comedy. I think you can also laugh at someone and laugh with them at the same time. You know, when Seth is falling down the stairs in these situations, you're laughing at how kind of silly it is and the sight gag of it, but you're also laughing with him because you know his point of view going into it. And you're kind of excited about his point of view. He's reconnecting with his dream girl who he hasn't seen in so long, and that is exciting. And you can sort of empathize with that and put yourself in that position. And so, no, I don't think they're like mutually exclusive. I actually think they work very nicely together.
Okay, because I guess I was thinking too. This is the most pronounced version of that. The characters living in two very insulated worlds.
Yeah,
and I wondered if you felt like you had to really even kind of exaggerate that a little bit more just because there's such a kind of a chasm that exists between them before they intersect.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was, you know, that was a trope that we were really excited to explore was like, you know, you think about the beginning of Pretty Woman, for example, and you see Richard Gere in his, you know, driving around in that car and you see Julia Roberts going through her day-to-day life in, you know, in L.A. I can't even begin to talk about how crazy that movie is. That's like, that movie could not get made today, nor should it get made today. but anyway, I just think it's like the fairy tale. It's like the fairy tale aspect of it is what's really exciting. And so what we were trying to do with this movie was like play within the tropes of the genre, give you the fairy tale, but also do it in the most grounded way possible. So
it's funny because as you were talking about that, I was thinking about how much these movies seem like fairy tales, and to me, the one that feels the most like a fairy tale and is The Night Before.
Yeah,
which is a fairy tale, but it's all these things we're talking about: the insularity of the characters, the fact that so often they're such egotists that they can't see anybody's point of view but their own,
right?
And the tension that creates.
Yeah.
I mean, that playing that stuff in almost a surreal circumstance. And I guess I thought I saw the connection between that movie and this because they're both kind of fairy tales in
right.
a way. But this is much more grounded, but also about the idea of what happens with adult compromise. And this often something that somebody's afraid of because it makes them think they can't be themselves and compromise.
That's so interesting. Yeah, that's great. I never even thought about that in connection to this movie. But as you're saying it is true. And that movie, of course, is like a much more sort of surreal, you know, one crazy. It's more in the genre of like the One Crazy Night kind of movies, which are also movies I like. This is much more in the romantic comedy genre. But I think that yeah, it's the fairy tales. And I mean, Warm Bodies is also a fairy tale. And I think that yeah, I think I really like sort of. Again, working within those tropes and also subverting them at the same time and doing it in a way that feels very modern, but also nods to the kind of rich tradition of all that stuff. And that is what we were doing with this movie. We were taking our time to sort of show their distinct you know, their context before we bring them together. Because I think there's a tension in that too, and you're kind of waiting for them to meet for the first time. And like the other cool thing is I think we have the opportunity to work with like two giant movie stars at the top of their game, which I don't think you necessarily get that much these days, unless you're doing a superhero movie or something like that. You really, you know, that sort of old Hollywood thing of like, you have these two movie stars, they're kind of like have different rhythms and different vibes, but you're putting them against each other. And it's just this incredible thing that Hollywood has done throughout history that I got to do. And so that, the two different worlds of the movie star is also part of the dialogue that we're engaged in.
Yeah, but I guess
pretty cool.
You know, it is. But I'm also for myself thinking too about just how in these movies you're talking about tropes, and the trope that comes out so often is that they're all basically ensemble pieces.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, certainly we're waiting to see what happens when the two big stars get together,
yeah,
or the two main characters, but also the other characters inhabit these worlds just as much as the central protagonists do.
Yeah, I mean that's you know, in the running time of a comedy, you can only mine so much from your two main characters, and you know I think these movies are made or broken by the supporting cast, and luckily I think with this one especially we got a really great supporting cast of people. And what was also important to me was like I didn't want it to be people you've seen in movies with Seth before necessarily, because we really wanted this to work as a true story with real stakes that really felt like it was grounded and you believed what was going to happen. Night Before, we didn't care that much about that, so we were able to kind of use comedians who said that, you know, James Franco's in it, and obviously.
But also, but Michael Shannon turns up too.
Michael Shannon turns up. So when Michael Shannon turned up, that to me is like one of my favorite things I've ever had the luck to be a part of. Michael Shannon opposite those guys in that movie is like, I get endless joy from that. And just to discover how funny he was, for the audience to discover how funny he was. So, I mean, I feel like we're doing that a little bit in this movie, whether it be with Alexander Skarsgård or with O'Shea Jackson. It's like the sort of the jolt of electricity you get from seeing someone you didn't know was that funny be funny is really, really incredible. And then you populate it with other amazing actors who also can improvise, like June Diane Raphael or Ravi Patel.
Or Bob Odenkirk.
Bob Odenkirk, of course. And like, but you know, the way we got to Bob Odenkirk, of course, we know his sort of rich history in comedy, but we were working with Liz Hanna, who was helping rewrite the script. Dan Sterling wrote an amazing script, and then Liz Hanna and all of us came in and rewrote it, and Liz was on the set of The Post every day because she wrote The Post, and she would tell us how great Bob was. And so that really sort of put him in our brain. I mean, obviously, we knew and loved Bob Odenkirk, but to think that, you know, someone we knew was working with him and he was doing such a great job in a dramatic role, that's something I really like too, is like knowing someone has dramatic chops, whether we're relying on them or not, and also knowing that they have the ability to be light on their feet and do comedy. And Bob was like this perfect combination of that. And you haven't seen him. I mean, when he was on our set, this was not something he's gotten a chance to do in a very long time. I mean, even Better Call Saul, where he's funny, or Breaking Bad, where he's funny, he's not getting to play the way we let him play. And if you could see some of the takes that we didn't use, they're so, so funny.
We're out of time. My guest was whetting our appetite for stuff we won't be able to see in this new movie, Long Shot. It's Jonathan Levine. It's always good to have you here. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much, man.
My pleasure. Recording engineer here at NPR West is Josh Newell. The show is mixed by Kat Yores, edited by Blake Vitus, associate producer. I'm Elvis Mitchell. This is The Treatment. Catch up on past episodes of The Treatment, go to kcrw.com or listen on your smartphone with KCRW's mobile apps, or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or if you listen to podcasts. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.